Chapter 18. Wrapping up the universe. As we wrap up the universe, we will consider how parts of the universe seem to be self-organizing, how complex structures emerge, and how the way things slow down and fall apart, in other words, the second law of thermodynamics, is by no means the whole story. Highly unstable, charged entities, such as dusty plasmas, throw out dissipative structures over vast distances. In other words, leading scientists have been looking at the way that there are fundamental tendencies in the universe towards greater and greater complexity, towards the high levels of complexity necessary for intelligence. In trying to understand how human consciousness and intelligence works, classical science has tended to concentrate on chemical reactions in the brain. In the second half of the 20th century, many leading scientists shifted the focus to an interaction between matter and subatomic matter in the brain and external fields such as electromagnetic fields. It is well established, for example, that birds follow migratory paths by interacting with the Earth's magnetic fields. Could this be one small example of a universal phenomenon? It is also well established that artificial electromagnetic fields from phone masts can have a deleterious effect on human health and behavior. But could natural electromagnetism on the Earth, and more widely in the cosmos, have a much more fundamental, indeed essential role in forming and informing animal and human minds? Plasma's unique sensitivity to fields would seem to make it uniquely suited to this kind of interaction. And we have already begun to question whether there is plasma in the brain. Similarly, in recent times, the creation of artificial intelligence and quantum computers have helped prompt new perspectives on human intelligence and mind in two main ways. AI tends to see intelligence in terms of the transmission and processing of information. When it comes to understanding and defining human intelligence, this leads naturally to a focus on the flow of information rather than the flow of chemical and biological processes, in other words, information theory. Unlike traditional digital computers, which work by considering simple either-or options, albeit an immense accumulation of them, the bigger the accumulation, the more powerful the computer. The new quantum computers work much more powerfully, indeed on a whole different level, because they are able to consider many more options than a simple either-or at any one time, and indeed make multiple considerations such as these simultaneously. It seems not to have been recognized yet that this operates by means of what I call informational void creation. When one alternative is chosen over another, this creates an information void in the form of the rejected alternative. However, that void can be filled again by shifting one's choice to that alternative. With multiple choices taking place, the traditional one and zero of normal computing can be replaced by empty and full as concepts. With shifting but parallel geometries of information lattices and information void lattices side by side, continuously changing. The dynamics of these parallel lattices being plotted and manipulated by nonlinear equations. This can be studied in reduced form by plotting the mechanisms of memory retrieval. This may sound simplistic, but it is actually the best basis for the construction of a geometry of alternatives in the theory of quantum computing. Someone would need to mathematize that. And in this they are, of course, very like the human mind. What makes the development of these new quantum computers work is the way they use plasma. So again, we come back to this new way of trying to understand human intelligence and consciousness. Could it be that plasma in the human brain, the human body, has played a vital part in its evolution? We have seen a great deal of information and learned the life stories of some of the great heroes of science who have brought us this far, despite the fact that many of them were called crazy before they won their Nobel Prizes. Let us now try to bring together a summary of what all of this means. The first and most important thing is what I have stressed since the very beginning of this book, namely that physical matter is very rare in the universe and is not the predominant component of what exists. The obvious conclusion is that if the universe is full of life forms, including intelligent ones, the majority of them will not be made of physical matter. They will instead be made of plasma, and that may include us. I am suggesting that we are all made of plasma, and that our physical bodies are temporary vehicles for us to operate in the physical world for the short periods of time that our fragile bodies can permit, considering how quickly they wear out, how prone they are to accidents, and how vulnerable they are to disease. But that has been made amply clear at an earlier stage of this book. What we need to do here is to explore more thoroughly how living entities can come to be in a plasma universe. We are so used to being immersed in a world of physical matter that it is a great struggle for us to free ourselves from the encumbrances of stuff. Stuff is a wonderful word, used mostly in America, to refer to anything that encumbers one or gets in the way. On the other hand, stuff can sometimes be useful. It is because stuff has no actual definition that it can be used so readily as an idea. So let us free ourselves from our physical stuff and let our minds roam free. It is unavoidable to conclude that if the universe is made of 99.9% plasma, then life forms in it must also be 99.9% made of plasma. So we need to understand such life forms urgently. It is indeed difficult for us, being what we are, or should I say, being what we think we are, to imagine that a diffuse, charged, dusty plasma cloud could possibly be a living being. But what if you were such a cloud and saw us? You might think, what thick, clumsy, awkward objects those things are that move upon the earth. I wonder if they could possibly contain any elements of life in them. They may simply be moving lumps of protoplasm with four protrusions sticking out like viruses have, and everyone knows that viruses are not alive. Everything depends upon dust. This sounds so inglorious that it is difficult to grasp, because we are used to thinking of house dust and the need to clean the house, and also in my case, to dust my books. But in order for a plasma to come alive, it needs dust. It gives the particles something to cling onto. 10,000 electrons can cling to a single dust particle. So when you consider how many dust particles there are in a dusty plasma cloud, and if you imagine 10,000 electrons attached to each one, giving each dust particle the electric charge of 10,000 electrons, gigantic electric charges beyond any power station or power network on Earth can gather in a single cloud. The huge electromagnetic forces of the clouds are inconceivable to our tiny little minds. And even the bravest equation trembles at the thought of the number of exponents appearing in it. Each one carrying so many zeros, it is enough to make a person faint. So we get it. Things are different in space. One key to all these clouds coming alive is also in the supply of ready food. For plasma entities, that means a reliable flow of particles. Plasma clouds eat particles, in the way that whales eat plankton. Please note that whales are the largest mammals on Earth, but they eat the smallest food. Plasma clouds may be huge, but they too can eat their own space plankton, namely charged particles and ions. And it so happens that suns and stars are, as the English say, just the ticket, for they are spewing out particles continuously, and one aspect of this has been known for a very long time. I am referring to sunlight as the source of energy for plants. If plants can eat sunlight, then why can't plasma clouds do so too. Of course, I'm not suggesting chlorophyll in plasma clouds. I'm suggesting the absorption of energy from the particles consisting of the solar wind. The huge electromagnetic forces in the charged clouds are so much more powerful than gravity that they suffice to hold everything together, even if the cloud is extremely diffuse. We must never forget that electromagnetic forces are more powerful than gravitational ones by a factor of 10 followed by 39 zeros. We should therefore never underestimate the power of electromagnetism to hold things together, a perpetual embrace. Now we can see that it is not difficult to conceive of these large, charged, dusty plasma clouds becoming things. But how do they become living things? We have examined the anatomy of complex dusty plasma. At this point, I would like to refer the reader, or listener, back to what I wrote, or said, in Chapter 12 about how the electromagnetic strength of the Kordalevsky clouds could arise, which holds them together. I explained how spinning dust grains, like incredibly small rice grains, which range in size between a micrometer, which is 1/1000th of a meter, and a nanometer, which is 1,000 times smaller than that, each with a north pole and a south pole, can collectively, by their spinning, generate gigantic amounts of energy. They are like billions upon billions of microscopic power generators, and it is these that generate the energy which creates the structure and internal organization of the cloud. We have seen they do, in fact, become filled with crystalline structures, like the structures in organic life, double helixes capable of storing information, filaments to conduct currents like nerves in animal bodies, semiconductors capable of acting as Josephson junctions in the same way these things work in animal bodies, voids that separate different organs, enabling them to perform different functions within an overarching system, as our organs do in our bodies. You can have a hot pocket next to a cold pocket, and they will not disturb one another. Much of the cloud in space needs to contain superconductive currents, and that is easier at low temperatures in what is called a cold plasma. But because of sheaths, you can have all that going on at cold temperatures, while at the same time having internal sheathed pockets and currents operating at extremely high temperatures. We have also seen that the voids have regenerative capacities. We have seen that these plasmas contain seething patterns of interacting fields and currents, and that these are driven to very high levels of complexity by interactions with complex dust within. There may be as yet barely understood particles involved in this drive to create complex patterns such as magnetic monopoles and tachyons. We have looked at various theories to explain how the drive to complexity arises in the universe as a whole, and which may be pertinent to the evolution of life in plasma. We have looked at Prigogine's theories of dissipative structures. There are theories of emergence and self-organization, which describe how complex things grow spontaneously and unpredictably, so they become greater than the sum of their parts. And we looked at David Bohm's theory of the implicate order, of an ordering faculty that lies beneath the universal fields we know about. How might complex dusty plasmas be intelligent, like plants, humans, or quantum computers are intelligent? The light that information theory throws on the nature of intelligence shows that plant life can be extremely intelligent, and that plasmas may be intelligent in the same way. Plasmas compete for food, so there may also be a survival of the fittest factor driving their evolution. Like intelligent entities, plasmas may cooperate as well as compete, so that long-range order events may involve not only communication but cooperation in the process of achieving the complexity necessary for intelligence. We have seen that ball lightning, which is made of plasma, often behaves in an intelligent manner. We have seen that the role plasma plays in helping our own intelligence to evolve and function at high levels may also play out in plasmas in space, and that conditions may have been right for this billions of years before conditions became right for the evolution of life on Earth. I am also suggesting that the predominant forms of life in the universe are inorganic. The organic life forms of our planet are a footnote, not the main text, of the message of the universe. Just as information theory and the invention of digital computers caused us to reassess the nature and potential of intelligence, so too, the development of quantum computers has opened up new horizons. Quantum computers contain plasma to help harvest the weird phenomena of the quantum realm in order to generate intelligence far greater than any digital computer. Complex plasmas also have these properties. We have seen ball lightning move through solid objects, which is an example of the phenomenon of quantum tunneling happening in the macro world. We have seen gigantic filaments made of plasma carrying superconducting currents with energy and information. We have seen that these plasmas contain elements that work like Josephson junctions, which are used to control and fine-tune the flow of energies and information in machine intelligence, so they may have intelligence we can hardly begin to imagine. But we have also seen that our bodies have many of the plasma features, and that in addition to our meat bodies, we also have plasma bodies, and these interact with universal fields. What does this say about our own potential intelligence? More and more is being discovered about how the human brain works. We now know that individual neurons are not the elements of the brain, it is groups of neurons that are. And these in turn operate both in parallel and in a distributed sense. In other words, not solely in one area of the brain, but distributed across regions of the brain. This kind of brain processing is called parallel distributed processing. Another name for it is connectionism. I have written about this at very great length in another book, so cannot repeat it here. That book was called Open to Suggestion. It was published in 1989, and the relevant discussion constitutes the final chapter of the book, from pages 361 to 458. The ideas which I propounded in that chapter were praised by Professor Jack Hilgard, the former president of the American Psychological Association, and also by Professor John Taylor, who told me that he had adopted many of my concepts and suggestions for his neural network team at King's College London, and that I had therefore contributed towards an advance in neural network science, for which he thanked me. The book's publication in America was blocked by the CIA, as I was informed by no less than 8 American publishers who had been personally visited and warned not to publish the book. This had the indirect result of giving the UK an advantage in neural network science, since no one in America was able to obtain the book, as no international Amazon sales existed then. What is important for our purposes here is that intelligence emerges from the human brain not by chemicals next to each other interacting by physical proximity, but by connections over a distance. Similarly, it is the concept of long-range order that is crucial to the integrity of any plasma cloud in space. This is what occurs when a very large collection of disparate particles suddenly comes together and forms a coherent entity, which extends its central control over a long distance, somehow imposing long-range order. This goes against a lot of conventional thinking, because it suggests action at a distance. Isaac Newton became nearly hysterical when people spoke of action at a distance. In Principia Mathematica, 1713, he called it a philosophical absurdity. Albert Einstein was puzzled by it and called it spooky action at a distance. He and 2 colleagues formulated a famous concept in physics called the EPR paradox, the E being for Einstein and the P and the R being for the other guys. But just between us, I can tell you that the P was Podolsky and the R was Rosen. This was published in 1935, and dealt with particles coordinating their momenta when very far apart. So far, in fact, that they would have to exchange the information with each other by sending signals at greater than the speed of light. Since Einstein himself developed special relativity, which insists that the speed of light must be a universal constant that cannot be exceeded, he had a special interest in this unsolved paradox of physics. I myself have entered into the special relativity debate on the side of the speed of light as co-author of a paper with my friend Otto Roessler, which was a great honor because he is one of the world's most famous chaos theory scientists and the discoverer of the Roessler attractor. The phenomenon of non-locality, as they call it, which was raised by this paradox, has so far been proved to occur over distances of 50 kilometers, and the phenomenon is no longer denied. A special case of non-locality is the now fashionable subject of quantum entanglement. Entanglement has become a buzzword. What it means is that at the microscopic quantum level, things far apart can still be in contact. In other words, can be entangled with each other and interact. And the point about a huge plasma cloud that becomes an entity through coherence achieved despite non-locality is that it elevates the quantum state from the microscopic to the macroscopic. In other words, from the tiny to the huge. The entire cloud becomes a macroscopic quantum entity. So how is it possible for quantum phenomena to operate at these huge sizes? We were told for decades that quantum phenomena occurred only at microscopic levels, but things have now changed. I suspect that the answer to all this is what I discussed earlier, namely active information. Information does not have any energy or any mass. It is thus immune to the speed of light restriction, which applies only to matter, waves, and so forth. In order to extend across vast distances, information can exceed the speed of light quite happily without breaking any laws. A distributed information network would act as a unifying factor to enable the cloud to achieve stability as an entity. In fact, the vast amount of information in itself might knit a filamentary network of connected elements constituting a brain, in which information processing would be inevitable. As David Bohm and his close colleague Basil Hiley stated in 1993, quote, "We have seen that non-locality is contained in all the interpretations of the quantum theory that we have discussed so far, and our own ontological interpretation also contains non-locality as a basic feature." Unquote. Long-range order is an example of one of the outcomes that entanglement generates. This extraordinary phenomenon means that particles or things, very far apart indeed, can be closely coordinated and can behave as if they are all part of one centrally controlled organism. This is what is known as quantum entanglement, which we have already mentioned. Sometimes a system can suddenly undergo a change, known in the jargon as a phase transition, and millions of apparently separate things in the system instantaneously begin to act as one. Imagine 1 million people sitting in bars and pubs around the world, drinking casually with their friends. And suddenly, at the same instant, they all stand to attention and give a salute, even though they do not know one another, have never met, and never will meet. This is a phase transition, and is also referred to as the sudden onset of long-range order. No one is entirely sure how these things can happen in the natural world, but they do. And we now know that this form of coherence, by means of long-range order, can happen within plasma crystals. This means that both information and energy can come from far away. Because of entanglement, not only can parts of giant, dusty, complex plasmas communicate with each other and form coherent patterns over distances, but giant dusty complex plasmas at the opposite sides of the universe might in principle cooperate in the evolution of their intelligence.